is episode 263 of the Seahawkers podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy, Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Hey, it's a great day to join you. You know, the idea that we actually won in Pittsburgh? I mean,
yeah,
I'm stunned. I'm still stunned.
It's just a nice little present because we, as fans, were not expecting to go on the road, get the win, especially playing Big Ben in their home opener. It turns out, too, that last time that they did win in Pittsburgh, it was their home opener of that year, all the way back in 1999. So it's kind of fitting that just 20 years later, and we get a present, and Pete Carroll gets a present on his 68th birthday, his 100th win as the Seahawks head coach, 91 regular season wins, 9 postseason wins.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually quite an accomplishment right there. I mean, how many coaches make it to 100 wins with, you know, their entire career, let alone with one team? And I think that's a testament to his consistency here in Seattle and what he's meant to this organization. And I love the idea that at 68 years old, he doesn't seem even close to be slowing down. I mean, it just doesn't feel like we're close to the end of the road with Pete Carroll here.
Yeah, it was interesting hearing an interview with him recently where somebody asks him, I think it was on the Dax Shepard podcast, where he says, you know, does it ever weird you out that you're the oldest coach in the NFL? Is it weird for you to think about that? He says, well, it's only weird for me when people ask me that.
Right. Otherwise,
not something I think about.
Yeah, I don't wake up being like, oh, today I'm 68 again. You know what I mean? Right. Like I don't here wake I, up
here,
wondering
here
what
I
age
go to work as the oldest head coach in the NFL again.
Right.
How weird is this?
Yeah, exactly. So no, he seems to be doing great with it, and you know, thankful to have him as our coach, and you know, thankful to have him guide this team to a victory in Pittsburgh. I didn't think that this was going to happen. I really thought we'd be talking about an early road loss like they usually do to start out the year, especially in a place like Pittsburgh, you know, figuring Big Ben was going to go after the secondary, which didn't look great in the game against Cincinnati. But yet the defense came out and actually played a whale of a game.
They looked really good against Ben. The offense looks great in the second half. They get the 28-26 victory. Russell Wilson, for just the second time in his career, is taking the 2-0 Seahawks into week 3 of the NFL season. And I was fired up for the type of game that Russell had in this, especially after an interesting first half where he was getting the offensive line was just getting blown off the ball to it, having 3 sacks against the Seahawks offense. And but Russell, able to recover, goes 29-35 for 3 touchdowns, good enough to get NFC Offensive Player of the Week honors for that performance.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking we might actually save Russell talk towards the end of the game recap, but let's start it with it because he was phenomenal. He really was. And the thing is that he wasn't just phenomenal today. He was great last week, too. Just the numbers didn't quite stack up quite as much. I mean, the offensive line isn't doing him any favors. And he really looks like he's taking it to the next level. I mean, we talked a little bit about the game plan going into this week, you know, on the last show, and kind of dissecting what the Patriots did a little bit to the Steelers. And we talked a little bit about them running a lot of quick hitting stuff, you know, short crossing routes and things like that. And us just, you know, kind of deciding that, well, that's not really something Russell does. We don't do a lot of that. And, you know, so don't expect them to make that sort of adjustment. Well, they did. And Russ was getting the ball out really quickly, you know, hitting those little Patriot-esque style routes underneath and really just picked them apart. And they had no answer for it. And that's the thing about Russ this season is he's not only doing the play action stuff great. He's not only, you know, throwing the sexy deep ball amazing, but he's starting to do all the little things. He's hitting those check down receivers better with the little stuff out of the backfield. He's able to hit the little short stuff over the middle. He's not running like he used to, but he's running. He's picking his spots when he's running, and they're the exact right times, and he does it the exact right way, and he doesn't get hurt doing it. He's starting to play quarterback at the A++ level that we've all known he was capable of and we've seen in spurts, but he's really put it together.
Yes, and knock on all of the wood around you while you're saying that he doesn't get hurt while doing it, because it was on one of those runs where he slid and looked like he was going to just take his time getting up after twisting his knee a little bit, and gets up, and just a couple plays later, he's out back running again and seems fine. And then not too long after that, he had another 15-yard scramble that led to the 4th-and-1 that helped close out the game. But you talk about the adjustments, and it kind of it digs at me a little bit, because I think back to that playoff loss against the Cowboys, mm-hmm. to where it was a similar type of situation. You know, the defensive line for the Cowboys not really giving the Seahawks anything. You know, they want to stop the run, and then they make this shift and the offense looks completely different. And I think, okay, if they could do that on the road in Pittsburgh, why not do that on the road against a Cowboys team?
Well, that's actually something that you can see the Seahawks have learned from throughout the offseason when they went back and self-scouted from the last year, is how quickly they will now actually change their game plan throughout the game as compared to years past. Now, one thing that you'll never confuse the Seahawks for are the Patriots, in the sense of adjustments drive to drive. You're never going to see that. That's not who they are. That's not who Brian Schottenheimer is. That's not who Pete Carroll is. But I think what we saw in this game, and we're starting to see, is their ability to make adjustments at halftime and come out and really change the way that they're playing at that point. Now, make no mistake, this little gimmick of getting to the short passing game and Russ getting the ball out in 1.89 seconds per pass, we've seen this before, and it seemed to quote unquote solve the offensive line problem. What was it, like 3 years ago towards the end of the season?
It was 2015.
And how long did that last? A few weeks, until the league caught up to it and was like, all right, we're just going to sit underneath on all your stuff and you're going to be screwed. And yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen again in 3 to 4 weeks if the offensive line doesn't get its freaking poop in a group, especially the right-hand side of the line. So this was great for a game, and it was awesome to see, and Russ executed it perfectly, but it's not a sustainable solution to the rest of the season.
The offensive line does need to get its poop in the group. The poop seems to be grouped on the right side, and so we have an idea of where it's at.
Yeah.
And I just don't know if I'm a little bit hesitant to say, okay, this is a bad offensive line. I'm willing to wait until week 5 or 6, once we get out of these first few weeks, once they have a chance to work together. But one of the things that was curious to me, and I don't know if it stood out to you at all, but when DJ Fluker went down in this game, and it was Ethan Posick on the right side along with Jermaine Ifedi, it seemed like there were less issues with Ifedi during that time period.
I don't know that I made that correlation there. One thing that I do find interesting, though, is the idea of Fluker struggling in pass protection the way that he has, because last year he was actually pretty good. And we talked about it a lot on the show, and that was something that, you know, Chargers fans and Giants fans had been talking about when we picked him up. Well, cool, he's a great run blocker, but he's a turnstile as a pass protector. Have fun with that. Like, we heard that a lot from those fans. And then after last season, I was sitting there thinking, well, maybe you just had terrible coaching, or maybe the style didn't work for him or something, because he was actually pretty good. And now this year, I'm trying to decide, are we seeing a regression, or was last year just an anomaly, and now we're seeing the real DJ Fluker when it comes to pass protection? Because if this is the real DJ Fluker in pass protection, we got a problem. Because that's not going to work when you've got somebody like Ifedi who's has the struggles at right tackle right next to him. Like, that can't work long term. And I don't know, maybe it's just because he's injured. I don't know what it is, but we really need Fluker to get it together here over the last half of the season, or it's going to be a real struggle going down the stretch.
Yeah, we've talked about it in the past. You can get by with having one issue on your offensive line where you know that if there's going to be pressure, it's probably going to be coming from about this spot. But if you have two or three guys who are regular issues, then it's going to make it a lot tougher on your quarterback. Fortunately, it wasn't that they were able to make those adjustments that second half. You know, he had the 4 sacks, but I don't think he got touched at all hardly in the second half. And they had those drives where they just, you know, boom, 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 right down the field and picking up touchdowns. And it was, the running game was working. You had 10 carries for 62 yards, a 37-yard touchdown run by Rashad Penny. You had Chris Carson averaging 4 yards per carry, 15 carries for 60 yards on top of Russell's 22 yards. And CJ Procise even got a couple carries in there, so they had about 150 yards rushing.
Yeah, cumulatively, the rushing game actually looked pretty good when it was all said and done. But we just sat and talked about Fluker, a guy that I love, and am now saying, well, geez, we can't win like that if he's going to keep playing that way. Maybe we need to start looking at something else if this continues. Well, we're going to talk about another player that I really love, but I can't have his play right now. I can't be doing this, and that's Chris Carson. If one of your mantras, one of the core tenets of your program when it comes to football is it's all about the ball, then you can't have your starting running back turning it over 3 times in 2 games. If it's all about competition as well, if that's one of your other core mantras, and the number 2 back, Rashad Penny, isn't coughing up the football, then he's got to be your starter. Like right now, going into week 3, Chris Carson's benched if it's my offense, and Rashad Penny is now my starting back. Are there things about Penny that still drive me a little crazy? Sure. Did he actually show up and play a pretty decent game? Yeah, he did against Pittsburgh. But the thing that I loved most about his game is he held on to the damn football.
Right. Well, and I look back to week 1, and you know, they made a good play on that Chris Carson fumble. TJ Watt made a good play on Chris Carson in the fumble in this pass game. And yeah, the 2 fumbles in 2 games concerns me. That 3 one, I'm not going to put that 3rd one on.
I'm done with excuses.
Chris Carson.
I'm done with excuses.
There is no excuse to make for Chris Carson. He got the ball in his chest by Russell Wilson because Nick Vinette failed to even lay a hand on the dude that he was blocking and was at Chris Carson's feet. So that was a team fumble right there.
Catfish. Hold on to the ball.
He never had the ball. He never got it because Russell didn't give it to him and you know where his hands were.
Well, I don't know. I'm done with it. I'm already done with it. Like that game was more or less a blowout if it wasn't for Chris Carson. And I love Chris Carson. I love his style. I love the way that he infuses the offense with energy. I love all of that. But I can't have turnovers like that. Not at that clip. Nope. And that's a doghouse situation at that point. I'm ready for the Rashad Penny era as the starting back right now.
Well, it wasn't the doghouse era for Pete Carroll because, as I mentioned, after that Russell Wilson 15-yard scramble, it goes to 4th-and-1, and Chris Carson is there to come into the game and pick up 2 yards and close this thing out and close it in the manner of toughness that I want out of my Seahawks offense. You know, there are a lot of people. I like to, going into those decisions, I like to make the decision for myself, so I can't just play, you know, the armchair quarterback who says, oh, they should have done it this way because they didn't do it, because what they did didn't work. I'm saying in that moment, 4th-and-1, you look over at the Steelers, they still have a timeout on the board. You could kick a field goal, but it's a 50-yarder. It still gives them the ball back with 1 timeout, 2 minutes to go. That's plenty of time to drive down the field and score a touchdown. Mason Rudolph was looking pretty good. And if you kick a field goal and miss, then they only have 20, 25 yards to go for a game-winning field goal. If you have 2 minutes left and all you have to do is get the first down and you can make them use their timeout, you can kneel it down, and the game is over. And that was absolutely the right call by Pete Carroll in that moment.
So you liked it in the moment as well?
I really liked it in the moment because it was a way to show your toughness. 4th-and-1. I would have even liked to see him do it on 4th-and-2, and you know, a little bit farther back than that. I get a little bit iffy, but at that moment to close out the game, heck yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Actually, when I was listening to the tail end of that game, you know, they said they were coming out to go for it, and I was like, great, that's exactly what I want. Because just like you said, you impose your will on the other team. All you got to do is pick up 1 yard. You can't believe in your offense to pick up 1 yard to finish out a game. Like that's exactly the time to do that. And I love the call. I mean, I do. I'm glad that they gave the ball to Chris Carson because that's a part of his game that I really do like is the physicality.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, which side of the line did they run to?
To the left.
That's exactly right. And they managed to pick it up, close out the game, and which really turned out to be a big win. I don't care how many people are saying, well, okay, Seahawks squeaked out another one against, you know, the Steelers without
a backup quarterback.
Right. Because let's talk about the Steelers quarterbacks for a hot second here. First half of the game, Ben Roethlisberger was not good. He was not good at all before he even injured himself. Right. And hey, newsflash, he wasn't good against the Patriots the week before either.
Right.
Like, so I'm not saying that if Ben had played the entire game, that it would be a Pittsburgh win. There, that's for sure. And I wouldn't say that it would even be any closer. Like, he honestly, I think we would have beat him by more points if Ben had continued to play, because Mason Rudolph actually came in and looked a lot better than Ben.
Which worries me a little bit going into week three, but we can save that for later. But absolutely, that's why it didn't feel like an empty victory to me, because Ben was only 8 of 15, 75 yards. He had the sack. It was, and then his QB rating was under 70. So it was not a good look for Ben early on in that game. And I was liking what the defensive line was doing. Mm-hmm. Brandon Jackson was the guy to get in there and get the sack. And while Jadeveon Clowney didn't show up necessarily on the stat sheet, I think you can say now, after two games with Quentin Jefferson having two sacks in that first game, with Brandon mm-hmm. Jackson now having a sack, he's making his impact known.
Absolutely. He is definitely helping out those other guys by, you know, bringing the attention to him, allowing them one-on-ones. And I'm really excited for that defensive line group when we get Puna back, when we get Jaron Reed back, when Ziggy starts to play. I mean, you get all those guys together, and I think that's a really stout front four. And then you pair that with the linebackers, which Pete Carroll is deploying those three linebackers more often than he is a nickel defense. And much to the chagrin of every stat nerd out there, but it's working, and it actually looks pretty good. And the reason why it's working is they are smothering the run game.
Yeah.
Like, that was the thing I was most impressed with in the Steelers victory there, or the victory over the Steelers, maybe is the better way to put that. but it was the way that they stopped the run. And that was something we talked about in the last show. It's just what the Patriots did. They stopped the run. They made them one-dimensional. And then it was easy pickings from there. And they've done that now 2 weeks in a row. They've been really stout against the run. And it's one of the most important things in football. And stats nerds hate it because it's all about the passing game and fantasy numbers. But the truth be told is the running game sets up everything. It sets up everything.
I'm loving that you can get your digs in on quote stats nerds as much as you can in the show. But
well,
you're right.
What else do you want me to call them?
I love how they look with those linebackers on the field, and they had memorable plays and memorable moments in just throughout the game. You had Michael Kendricks blowing up James Conner on the outside after catching a little dump off pass. You had KJ Wright with his fingertip tackle of Juju Smith-Schuster, where he just brings him down by Schuster's hand.
They did the do-si-do together, like, right there. That was the, like, what? Like, some sort of jazzy twirly dance thing.
I've never seen anything like it before. It was amazing.
Me neither. No, I felt like we needed to have some, like, instrumental music playing while they, you know, slowly pirouetted to the ground.
And then you had Bobby Wagner, where there was one tackle that he made where the dude was just rolling at him full speed. And Bobby looks like he's standing still, catches the guy, and essentially throws him down backwards. Just,
yeah.
Oh, you think you have momentum? Not with me.
No. We're shutting that right down. Yeah, I'm really excited about that linebacking core. And don't take my word for it. Listen to Pete Carroll in his press conference regarding the three linebackers and, you know, the way that he feels that group is going to perform going forward. He starts out his quote with something along the lines of, "This is as truthful as I can possibly be with you guys," and then goes on to, like, talk about the praises of the three linebackers and what they feel they can do with them going forward.
It's pretty exciting to have a solid veteran group like they have. If they can stay healthy, that's going to be a key to how well this defense plays. The back end of the defense looking pretty strong. Trey Flowers bounced back from a rough week one game. Mm-hmm. Shaq Griffin had a solid game this week. You saw Lano Hill come in and fill in well for Tedrick Thompson, really just giving up that flea flicker play and otherwise playing pretty well.
Right. And that's a guy who hasn't seen a lot of playing time. And so you're going to get got on those little, you know, trick plays and that sort of thing, which, you know, going into the Saints game, that's something to keep in mind.
I feel like they have a few gadget plays in their playbook.
Yep, especially with there's a guy like Taysom Hill. I mean, Steve Young or whoever it is that whatever Sean Payton calls him. Yeah, but yeah, that, I mean, because that's coming up. But yeah, Leno looked okay. Bradley McDougal obviously had the pick. Now it wasn't exactly an amazing pick. The receiver flat dropped it.
Just went off his fingertips, which Moncrief in two games, he may not make it onto the field again for the rest of the season for the Steelers after his back-to-back games.
It's going to be a while. But, I mean, looking back on these first two games, I think the most frustrating thing for me at this point is the penalties. I am sick and tired of the penalties. Yeah. I mean, Jerron Brown, I mean, if you can read the guy's name before you block him, then don't block him, because that's a block in the back. Okay, don't do that. And that's apparently all they use Jerron Brown for is blocking. So, yeah, I mean, he should at least do that well.
And after 2 weeks, I did not expect Malik Turner to be the guy making the impact on offense. But it was a catch by Turner on third down, a big catch on a third and 10 where he picked up 15 yards. He also had that big 30-yard catch when the Seahawks were backed up at the end of the first half. Thanks to a Jerron Brown block in the back, and he was able to bail Brown out there in that situation. So, yeah, there were a couple drive killers, especially in the first half with penalties, but then I was impressed by how they were able to overcome some of those other penalties later on in the game.
Yeah, for sure. And as frustrated as I am with the penalties, I know that they're not going to stop. Like, that's something that is a part of Seahawks football under Pete Carroll since Pete Carroll's been here. And there's been so many comparisons made so far between this team and the 2013 team, right?
Yeah.
Because they both started 2-0 and yada, yada, yada. And there's some parallels there, sure. But let's be clear about one thing. The Seahawks play a particular brand of football, and it looks like defense, running the football, shot plays downfield with your quarterback, and winning the turnover battle, right? Mm-hmm. When we won the Super Bowl, we were the most penalized team in the NFL.
Right.
That is not something that is going to change anytime soon. Pete Carroll lives with those things. That's fine. What we do have to clean up is the turnovers. And that's why I am so frustrated with Chris Carson and the fumbles already. Like, we need to be on top in turnover differential. It's one of the biggest things in football.
Yeah, and I can see that. I wonder now, though, if a big part of Pete Carroll's game is going to be winning pass interference penalties, because he used both of his challenges in this game on pass interference penalties. And although he lost that first one where Michael Kendricks was called for PI right near the goal line.
Rightfully so. That was PI.
But Pete Carroll phrased it in a way that he thought that maybe he could have the officials look at it as a potential pass interference by the offense in that situation.
No. Pass interference, offense. Yeah. But it wasn't. So that was a dumb challenge. I didn't like that challenge at all. The one that he did challenge regarding Edmonds on Lockett, like in real time, that looked like PI. And lo and behold, it was. And that's the whole point of the challenge flags. That's why they've been introduced into the league this year for pass interference. And Pete's going to use them.
I'm a little surprised it got overturned, though. Weren't you?
Are you?
I was, yeah. It doesn't seem like they ever overturn. I was more concerned about the fact that they missed the headshot on Russell Wilson on that play.
Yeah, so that one's super problematic. I mean, man, if that was Tom Brady...
Oh my gosh.
Do you think Bud Dupree plays for the next 3 weeks even? I mean, not only does he get thrown out of that game, but he probably gets suspended a couple games, right?
Yeah.
With Russell Wilson. Yeah. Well, drink your bubbly water, because apparently that's going to solve all your problems, and we're not going to worry about it if we're the league. Like, that's how they look at it, apparently. I don't know. It's crazy.
I think fines come out maybe on Thursday in the week, so we may see it then, but it does sound like... Pete Carroll was pretty upset about the fact that they didn't even see that. And especially when you look around the league and you have that game between the Broncos and Bears.
Oh, I was just going to say that too. Like that Bradley Chubb call, like you're going to call that.
You're going to call that.
But when the guy goes headhunting against Russell Wilson, you're not going to call that.
Yeah.
Like I think that's what frustrates the coaches the most, is the inconsistency of it.
Right. And especially when it's so obvious, and in the situation with Chubb where it's not even, it shouldn't even be called.
Yeah, that's just called a tackle.
Right.
Yeah.
So Pete Carroll does win the second challenge. It does set them up pretty well for that touchdown strike to DK Metcalf. And three catches for DK, 61 yards, gets his first touchdown of his NFL career. Looking pretty good for Metcalf so far this season.
Yeah, so I'm kind of surprised it took us this long to get to DK. He looks legit, doesn't he? I mean, I don't know what else to say. He looks legit.
He does.
And I'm super excited. I mean, just the way that he is every bit as physical as he was advertised to be. He's just as fast as he was advertised to be. His hands are just as mediocre as they were advertised to be. I mean, he dang near misses that touchdown by the bobble, you know, but he does manage to crowd it. I think
the defender got a hand on the ball a little bit, though.
All right, maybe. But you know what I'm getting at. But that very first catch he had on the very first play of the game on offense for the Seahawks, you know, that back shoulder throw, that was a difficult catch right on the sidelines, and he reels it in. And Russ has all the confidence in the world with him. And you talked about Malik Turner a little bit and the opportunities that he's getting. Well, the reason why, you know, the defense is so soft against him is Tyler Lockett is flat killing it. And DK is scaring the living daylights out of defenders right now. And there's so much attention being placed on those two guys. And then you mix in Uncle Will with all of that.
Uncle Will. Two touchdowns, man. Five catches, 50 yards. What a great day for the tight end. And a guy who is like a quarter of his catches so far in the NFL now are for touchdowns.
Yeah, man. He's my new favorite Seahawk. Like, by far. Like, right. I love Will Dissly. You know, the native Montanan. I mean, there's a reason why he kicks ass. And, you know, Montana's for badasses. And, you know, clearly Uncle Will is a badass, and it's nice to see him come back from that patellar tendon tear and just tearing up the league. It's awesome to see, and it's just another element of this offense that, you know, defenses are struggling to cover, and it all starts with Russell Wilson just playing point guard and distributing the ball to whoever's open. He just doesn't give a rip who it is. He makes anybody look good.
And that's what you need from your quarterback. And when we talked about going into the season with people going, oh, what are you going to do without Doug Baldwin? You know, is Tyler Lockett going to be able to step up into that number one receiver role?
Yep.
And are you going to be able to survive with, you know, three rookie draft picks making the roster?
Yep.
Turns out when you have the top paid quarterback and Russell Wilson on your team, it makes a difference.
Yeah, it really does. And I mean, that's when you know you have one of those top tier quarterbacks is they make everybody around them better. And he's been doing that for the last few years.
Chris Carson adding to his receiving totals. He had three catches. ProSize had three catches in there during the 2-minute drill.
Yeah. ProSize looked good. Penny looked pretty darn good for the most part. He still has these runs every now and then. He had two in this game where there was literally a gaping hole to the left, a gaping hole to the right.
And he goes straight.
And he just runs straight up the backside of the offensive lineman, then eventually kind of bounces to one side and, you know, picks up three when he could have 25, right?
Yeah.
He's got a little of the No-Sean Moreno thing going on, like No-Hole Moreno did early in his career, where he just really couldn't see it. Maybe he's just pressing a little too much. I mean, you saw Carson with some patience early on in the game, like that, what was it, a first and 19 early on in the game. And he, you know, took his time following the lead blocker through there, the offensive lineman, and then picked his hole and you know, just hit it.
Yeah.
And Penny will get there. I think I'm seeing improvement in his game, and that's exciting. The touchdown run by him was a nice run. It's quintessential of the way that he runs. I mean, he broke a little ankle tackle, bounced it to the outside, and then outran everybody, especially behind his lead blocker, number three.
And when you look at the fact that he only has, I mean, just this game, he broke 100 NFL rushing attempts. So I feel like once he has more opportunities, you know, maybe that vision where it doesn't maybe translate quite the way it did in college, maybe that's able to develop a little more. And that's still where my hope is.
Well, and there's been examples going through time, you know, and Knowshon Moreno, I think, is a great example of that.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember early on in his career, I mean, as a Denver Bronco, I'd make fun of him relentlessly. It, you know, again, the nickname, No Hole Moreno, like he just run it where there was no hole.
Right.
And towards the end of his career, he really turned into a good back and his vision really improved. And that could be something that you see here. And I'm hoping for it. I've been saying it to get things clear with a few of the listeners. Okay. I am not a Rashad Penny hater. Just didn't like the pick at the time. Hadn't shown me much up until this point. And I've said from day freaking one, I hope I'm wrong. I hope he turns out to be awesome. But at this point, not so much. But we're starting to see a little bit of a glimpse of it. And I would, again, I would begin to start him now.
Well, good. Because, yeah, you can't root against dudes on your team.
No. I mean, I said it from day one, but somehow I get labeled as a hater. I don't know.
I mean, I'm still waiting for a Fetty to pull this together the way James Carpenter did in his final season. So I'm holding out hope there, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're going to have to wait for him to get paid by another team then.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm worried about. But
I don't know. I mean, there's got to be a better right tackle somewhere that we can pick up. Right? Like for next year. I mean, I know we're riding with the Fetty this year, but I think we're all done with the Jermaine Ifeti experience.
Here's the thing though. I look just at Seahawks right tackles in history. Other than when they got like Howard Ballard from the Bills back in the 80s.
Okay.
I don't know if they've had a dude who's been good. Like, I think we think back to Sean Locklear just because he was part of that great Seahawks offensive line.
Yes.
But yeah. Locklear, he was the weakest link on that offensive line. And at that time, we all hammered and complained about how terrible Sean Locklear was.
Right. Well, that was also a different day and age in football. I mean, that was a time when defenses would take their, you know, best pass rusher. They'd always line them up against the left side of the offensive line. Yeah. Always. What they did, the blind side of the quarterback. That's what they did every single snap for the most part. Now, these days, teams are really moving their dominant pass rusher all over the place, all the time. And so you can't just have a stud left tackle and then, you know, some scrub at right tackle. You actually need good tackles, plural. Yeah. And Ifeti is by far a below average offensive lineman. He just is. And it's absolutely frustrating. Locklear was at least freaking average for his time.
And I do think that it's part of being the weak link of the group, right? I think it's always right. Going to fall to the weak link to where among five guys, the fans are going to point out where the weakest one is and just complain about that one particular guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's just part of the nature of the beast, but if this was, say, a really good offensive line and like the weakest link was, again, a Locklear level player, right, who was average out there, I mean, then maybe I'd get on the fans a little bit and be like, come on, man, we're have reasonable expectations, right? But he's not even close to average. Like, he's like legit bad. And so I think you can legit complain about it.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can complain either way as a fan.
Well, I mean, you can, but I mean, do it without sounding like a jackass.
I understand.
Okay.
Well, I think that covers the win over the Pittsburgh Steelers. We have this game coming up against the New Orleans Saints. The Seahawks come back home. Before we get there, though, there's been some talk in the media about potential defensive back help. And unfortunately, the Seahawks lost out on the Minkah Fitzpatrick sweepstakes.
I don't think that's that unfortunate. I don't think Minkah Fitzpatrick is that good of a safety.
I don't know if he came to Seattle, I don't know if you're looking at him as a safety. I think he would be a slot corner, and that's where the Seahawks need an upgrade.
I guess.
That's where I was looking at him as a potential upgrade.
I don't look at Fitzpatrick as a massive upgrade over the guys that we have.
He's an upgrade over Jamar Taylor.
Okay. A first round pick upgrade?
For what?
I don't think so.
Yeah, if they would have had to give up. Well, and that's the thing.
And how long is Ugo Amadi out? Like, is he worth a first round pick of an upgrade over Ugo? I don't think so.
I don't know. Yeah, first round pick is awfully tough, although we've seen the Seahawks, how they've used their first round picks in the past. So I struggle with that a little bit. But when I saw what the Steelers gave up for him, the Steelers are giving up a first round pick and they're swapping, you know, fourths and fifths and sixths.
Yeah.
For a team that just lost their starting quarterback, there's no way the Seahawks could compete with that.
Well, no, and why would you? I mean, I just don't see him as that kind of a difference maker of a player on the back end of your defense to give up that sort of draft capital. You know, if you're the Seahawks. Now, the Steelers, like, their secondary has been banged up and, you know, they're kind of in Strugglesville that way. Also, with Big Ben going down, I mean, you're going to have to rely on your defense stepping up and being more of a factor if you're going to win games going forward. And I think it's a statement by the Steelers of how much they believe in Mason Rudolph as the future of that franchise. Sure. And so they're going to give him the best opportunity to win. I feel like that was probably a good trade for them. I don't know that it would have been a great trade for us. It's just different. Circumstances are different for every team.
Well, there is other safety help potentially out there with Jamal Adams benched for five plays and then reportedly wants off of the Jets. That would be, you know, an interesting consideration for a first round pick for the Seahawks. Jalen Ramsey sounds like he wants out of Jacksonville. I don't know.
That would be it. He's the ultimate, like, is he worth the headache guy? I mean, because he's every bit as talented as Sherman was at the peak of his powers, right?
Oh, yeah.
And he's every bit as obnoxious, if not more, with his mouth and his actions off the field. And I don't know that I want the hoopla back. I think I don't.
I like Flowers. I like Griffin. There is a hoopla factor involved, but then you go, oh man, he's just so good. And if you were able to make sure, and this is where I struggle with the Jalen Ramsey thing, because do you trade what the Jacksonville Jaguars are asking? If it's a first round pick, and I don't know, maybe even have to throw in a fourth, I don't know, but do you make that deal without having a long-term deal? Because you want to kind of feel him out for the next 10 games to see if he is, you know, the type of team guy that you want on your team long-term. Or if you're giving up that kind of draft capital, do you want to say, no, we got to make this happen. We got to lock this up long-term.
Yeah. I mean, how much is left on his rookie deal?
I think it's his last year.
This is last year. Yeah. Okay, if you could take the knucklehead factor out of it and you were just doing it on talent, I mean, I think he'd be worth what will be an equivalent of what? A late first round pick, right? I mean, it's not like he's going to be we're not going to have a top 10 pick. I mean, it's kind of clear at this point.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I would take that flyer on him, even if that means, like, you know, throwing in a fourth or things like that. If you end up losing him, you get the compensatory pick. John Schneider can flip that with his magic wand into 47 picks and, like, we'll be fine. So I think I would do it. I just don't know that I want that sort of malcontent on my team.
Yeah.
I just don't know that I want that. Yeah. And it could be the fact that, I mean, Doug Marrone hasn't exactly been a guy that's been known as a football coach that the players really rally behind. You know, it's not like Pete. So maybe he'd be better in this culture. I mean, I guess if you're really going to mirror the Patriots, you'll take on anybody with talent because your culture is going to outweigh their crappy behavior.
Sure.
And you believe in that. And maybe the Seahawks will do that. I don't know. It's a steep price.
At least with Ramsey, you know, when he went off on all those quarterbacks and talking about who was trash and who was terrible, Russell Wilson wasn't on that list. So I feel like we're starting off, at least we would not have, you know, potentially the drama that seemed to exist between Richard Sherman and Russell Wilson.
Oh, yeah. I mean, who cares? Like that whole thing where Ramsey came out and he was calling out quarterbacks. That's what DBs do.
Yeah, but he didn't call out, like, Russell. So it would be a problem if the Bills wanted him, I think.
I don't think it would. I really don't.
No, probably not.
Nope.
Well, if it's not then, and Ramsey is that type of guy, then I think you go ahead. But
yeah, I mean, let's not lie. It'd be nice to have him against the Saints coming up.
Sure. Yeah, I would take him against the Saints even without Drew Brees, right? Because you don't know what quarterback you're necessarily going to get. I saw Rod Walker of the New Orleans Advocate. He asked Sean Payton if he's going to limit Taysom Hill's usage now, the third string quarterback, if now that he's the number two quarterback behind Teddy Bridgewater. And Peyton says to him, you know, you're assuming that Taysom Hill's the number two, which leads me to believe that I don't know if they have the number one or number two all settled out in New Orleans.
Why do they need to? I think you're going to see a lot of both quarterbacks. I mean, we've seen Sean Payton run Taysom Hill out there in his little specialty packages, right?
Yeah, when Drew Brees is healthy. Yeah, and Drew Brees goes out and stands like he's a wide receiver.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly think you could see a half a Teddy, a half a Taysom. You know, I mean, anything like that. It would be quarter by quarter, drive by drive. I mean, you're going to see probably equal amounts of both guys. I'd be stunned if you didn't.
Sean Payton doesn't care about having continuity at quarterback for any one particular player. He's a coach that goes out there to win a game.
Yeah, his continuity is his system. Like, he believes in the continuity of that.
Yeah.
You know? And I think Teddy could come out and play well. I mean, I'm a fan of Teddy, even though he hasn't looked great. You know, end of last year, preseason this year, coming in this last game, hasn't looked amazing. By all accounts, Taysom Hill looked amazing in the preseason.
Mm-hmm.
But again, this is going to be another one of those games that I think is going to be frustrating, because much like the Bengals game where you didn't really know what to expect because the coaching staff was all new, same sort of thing here. Like, we knew what to expect when Drew Brees trotted out there.
I would rather face Drew Brees, honestly.
I think I would, too, at this point in his career.
Although, I guess
right?
If I knew that it was going to be Bridgewater under center the whole game, and I'm looking at his stats where it's, you know, he has a 67 passer rating in a clean pocket. That's not good. And an 83 passer rating under pressure. I would be okay with Bridgewater, but that's what makes me think that we're going to see a lot of Taysom Hill.
Yeah, I think you'll see a lot of both of them. But the good news is you know, past Michael Thomas, who's an amazing player, their wide receiver core, not amazing. Like, they're not stretching the field. You know, basically the running back crew with the loss of Ingram this over the offseason. I mean, that leaves you with Kamara. And while a talented outside the numbers guy, he's not going to be a difference maker as far as, you know, setting the tone throughout the game. I don't know that you can just rely on him to be the offense.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that does concern me about the Saints is that defensive line. I mean, they've got some real studs up there. Cam Jordan is no joke.
No.
And he could make a Fetty look even stupider, like, throughout the course of a game.
I think I read that they have the top ranked defensive line, according to Pro Football Focus, through the first two games this season. And
I also saw Pro Football Focus had Tyler Lockett graded at a 59 so far this year.
Okay.
So,
well, I think that had to do with the drop. You know, I think they mark down drops really heavily. I think they mark down missed tackles really heavily. So I can see how that might have that impact on his score so far.
I guess. But you got to, stats nerds, you got to watch the games.
Well, it was kind of a critical situation, too.
It depends on when the drop is, right?
It was a pretty critical situation, though.
I guess.
No. But, hey, while we're on stats, let's look at Russell Wilson's and measure that up, because Russell Wilson, passer rating when in a clean pocket, 145.9. Under pressure, 69.9. Not so good, but I like how PFF is doing the big time throw percentage now, a part of their stats. He's up over 5%, and Bridgewater at 0. And they even do percentages of turnover worthy plays where Russell's at 0 right now.
There you go. No, he's playing at an elite level, obviously, when you can keep him clean. And that's basically been the MO of almost every great quarterback. You keep him clean and you're toast, you know, if you're the defender. I like the way that he's performing that way. And then under pressure, too. Like, I mean, you say, well, 69, you know, quarterback rating under pressure. That's actually not bad.
It's not bad.
I mean, it really isn't. And that's something he's thrived on throughout his career, being a good quarterback under pressure. And I think you'll see that number go up. I like this matchup for the Seahawks, you know, having the Saints come up to the clink, a place where, you know, the Saints haven't had a lot of success. And then obviously Drew Brees being out, I think the Seahawks can establish the run game against this Saints team. And then the rest will be history. I don't know that we'll see a replication of the, you know, quick passing game thing that we saw against the Steelers. You know, their secondary is vulnerable. I mean,
with that Saints defensive line, though, we could see it.
Yeah, it's possible.
I think their starting linebacker, he went to IR this week. One of their starting linebackers.
Yeah. But I expect a win in this game, putting us at 3-0. I'll be in the stadium. We don't lose when I'm in the stadium. It's just how it goes.
It's going to be close, though. Probably.
They're always close. They're always close. That's how we play. But even going 3-0 and all that, I'm not entirely sure that we're going to know if this team is actually good until about week five, after week five.
Once we start playing division games, right?
Yeah, I mean, Cincy is Cincy, right? The Steelers, I don't think, are all that great, and that's not whether Ben's in or not. I just don't think that's a great team right now. Mm-hmm. New Orleans without Drew Brees, I mean, I don't know. Like, that doesn't scare me nearly as much as it, you know, as it normally would.
Then you have Arizona.
You know, Arizona after that, like, cool. I can't wait to play the ballless Cliff Kingsbury team. Like, that's going to be great. And so then, you know, week five is obviously
Rams on LA Thursday night, which Thursday night games can go either way, it seems like sometimes.
Who knows, man? And I mean, it's not like the Rams have looked amazing either.
No.
As much as everybody wants to just, you know, heap praise on them, they haven't looked absolutely outstanding yet either.
It wasn't until the fourth quarter against the Saints where they were putting up points on them. And if not for that missed call at the end of the first half, where the Saints,
the game's even closer.
Yeah. The Saints would have been in the lead for a while too. And who knows, maybe Sean Payton can sit on things a little bit more and make it a little bit tougher on Jared Goff toward the end. But,
well, it's hilarious. I mean, you hear the national pundits being like, well, you know, the Seahawks beat, you know, Cincinnati, whoop-de-doo, right? And then they, right.
Yeah, well, yeah, because San Fran went and blew out Cincy.
Yeah. So what? And
that's what I'm saying. So now they're looking at, oh, well, San Francisco 49ers 2-0. There's right. The team in the NFC.
Right. Well, I mean, they're playing well. I'm not going to take anything away from them.
Sure.
It's just, I just don't know that Jimmy G is going to be healthy for a season. So that's a whole nother can of worms. But, you know, so the Rams go out and we go out and we beat Cincy. We beat Pittsburgh. Oh, well, that was without Big Ben. And then when we beat the Saints, it's going to be, oh, that was without Drew Brees. And then the next week, but guess what you don't hear about the Rams? Oh, they beat the Saints, but they were in a dogfight until Drew Brees went out. And mm-hmm. He went out early. And they, you know, it still took them almost a full game to finally turn it on towards the end.
And Cam Newton, you know, not having his best game.
Cam stinks right now.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, it could be over for him in Carolina.
Isn't it crazy how many quarterbacks you look at across the league? You have Cam struggling. You have Drew Brees out. You have Big Ben out now. Nick Foles went down.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so many guys. I mean, I don't want to talk about Russell Wilson being in MVP contention when he might just be like a last man standing type of deal. But it's pretty wild out there.
Yeah, if it weren't for the Mahomes this year, I would say that Russell Wilson would have an amazing shot at MVP this year.
Oh, yeah. But Tom Brady,
yeah, I mean, he's looking awesome. And of course, with that wide receiving core now, he's going to look even more awesome.
Gross.
But we've been kind of feeling this coming for years, right? Like, we've all been sort of waiting for that changing of the guard of the Tom Brady's, Eli Manning, Philip Rivers, Big Ben, Drew Brees.
Eli Manning, now out. Daniel Jones starting for the Giants.
Yeah, we've been kind of waiting for that, you know, class of quarterback to finally move on and, you know, actually retire or be forced out of the game. And you're kind of starting to see it. And it's starting with some of the guys that you probably would have figured first. I mean, to be honest, I'm kind of surprised it's taken this long for Ben to miss his kind of time, you know, just with the way he plays the game and the way he's been breaking down over the years. Eli's been done for 2 years.
Right. You got Drew Brees and what is he? I mean, he's over 40, isn't
towards
he?
He fell off towards the end of the year.
Yeah.
And I kind of expect the next guy to end up in Strugglesville towards the end of the season to be Philip Rivers. And everybody wondering if he's finally ready to hang him up. I don't know. We'll see.
And Tom Brady will play for 5 more years.
Probably. yeah.
All right, Adam. Well, I think with that, what do you say we get into the second half of the show?
Sounds like a plan, man.
Getting into the second half of the show. And Adam, I'm fired up for this game against the Saints, not just because we're going to be there, but this has a chance to be the type of, well, it's very likely going to be the type of game where Russell takes another step up the ladder of Seahawks greats, because I know Russell won't care, and I know the yards don't matter, but this is for me, and I'm excited to witness Russell Wilson just needing 14 passing yards to go past Dave Craig and become the number two all-time quarterback in passing yards behind Matt Hasselbeck.
Not surprising there, right? I mean, how far is he behind Matt?
It's not far. He should, I think if he goes for 3,000 more yards, if he hits 4,000 yards this year, he'll break Matt Hasselbeck's Seahawks record.
That feels about right.
Yeah.
But that also lets you know just how good Hasselbeck and Dave Craig were. I mean, think about that. Think about how amazing Russell's been over his career here as a Seahawk going into year 8. And he's just now catching up to, you know, what those guys did for the Seahawks throughout their careers there.
I think of both those guys being with the team a lot longer.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
So it does surprise me that Russell's there already.
How many years did Matt play with the Seahawks? It feels like about 8.
He's
got a few with Green Bay.
He started, I think, in it was maybe 2001.
2000?
I think it was 2001 where he took over. I think it was Kitna in 99. And then I think it was Dilfer and a mix of Dilfer and Warren Moon, right?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
He started 12 games in 2001.
Okay.
So 10 years with Seattle.
All right.
So
as a starter, though, so 2001 till he was out in
2010 was his last year.
11, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, 2011 he played for the
Colts.
No, Titans.
Oh, the Titans.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Titans. Mm-hmm. Yep, that was his last full year starting, was with the Tennessee Titans in 2011.
So 9 years as the starter, more or less.
11 if you count his 10 years with Seattle. He started his very first year.
No, I'm talking just a starter for Seattle. He was the starter for 9 years.
10 years, yeah.
01 through 2010, right?
Yeah, that's 10 years.
That's 9 years.
Well, you count the actual year that he played. You don't subtract.
All right. All right, fair enough.
I know, math is hard sometimes.
I don't know. Can we count that last year?
The 2010 when he was injured he started 14 games. It was 2008 where he was really hurt. He only started 7 games in 08.
I can't remember which year he became as our group of friends of Fragile Back. Yeah. And he just like crumpled in the end zone after running in there untouched.
Yeah. All right. Another reason to be excited for this week coming up is Russell Wilson just needs 2 touchdown passes to pass Matt Ryan to be in 4th place for most touchdowns by a quarterback through his first 8 seasons.
I hate those stats. The ones that was like, most this for his first 5 years.
It just annoys you because he's passing Matt Ryan, and you think that he's already better than Matt Ryan.
No, it annoys me because let's tally it at the end, okay? Yeah. Like, the fastest guy to this many or whatever. I don't care.
I was on Seahawks.com, Adam, and I wanted to get your take on this. They are polling Seahawks fans as part of the NFL's 100th year for the Seahawks most memorable moment. And I can give you the top 4, but I'm kind of curious to see if what your top 4 is.
Jeez Louise, right out. Okay. The tip
with no prep. Let's hear it.
Okay. So the tip.
Sure. That's one that immediately comes to mind for me too.
I'm going to go with Bo Jackson run over the boss.
I think we want it to be a positive Seahawks memory.
It just said memorable. Okay. I was going to guess there's going to be a couple not positive ones.
All 4 of these are positive.
Oh, well, that makes it a little tougher. The tip, then what else? I don't know, man.
Come on, dude.
I suck at these sort of things.
Beastquake.
Okay, Beastquake, sure. See, this is what I'm saying. Like, I'm not going to sit here and figure these out off the top of my head. No.
Well, those are the 2 that I think immediately come to my mind. But the other 2 that they had in there, one of the last 2 was the NFC Championship game-winning pass to Jermaine Kearse.
Okay.
And then the 4th one was really cool to see. Steve Largent's hit on Mike Harden.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that would have been... one that I wouldn't have thought of the top of my head, obviously.
Yeah.
And but when you say it, it's like, oh, yeah. He gave him the decleater.
Yeah.
That was fun.
But Beastquake so far, 42%, Tip 30%, Curse 15, 12 for Largent. So, and that's only after 400 votes.
I'm honestly surprised it's not the Tip.
I was surprised too. That seems like a bigger play to me.
Oh, not only a bigger play, but, you know, just the drama around all of it coming down to the wire, birth to the Super Bowl on the line, the Sherman Crabtree stuff. Like, just all of it, man. Like, to me, it's the Tip.
Yeah. Well, I think of that as being, you know, not just Seahawks plays, but Seattle sports history.
Oh, easily, yes.
Probably number one.
Yeah.
All right. How about we welcome some new members of the flock before we get into some Do Better and Better at Life?
Hey, man, we've been on the roll with the whole edition of new flockers.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, we got three new ones here this week. A one-time donation from Jeff Scott for $40. Welcome to the flock, Jeff.
Heck yeah, man. And I don't care what Michael Paul says. Two first names. I still don't trust you entirely. I mean, that's why I probably came in with a one-time donation so we can't track his movements and stuff.
That's right.
You know, over the months. No, but we appreciate
Although,
that.
Although, you know, you pulled that out last week, and I meant to challenge you on this because it was Stuart Suddeth. And I don't know what you were hearing with his last name, but Stuart emails in. He says, Adam, you don't trust me because I have two first names. I don't know what kind of first names you have in Montana, but Suddeth isn't too common around here.
Oh, I didn't think it was that. I thought it was something.
He did say that he became a member of the flock after only listening to half a show.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome, man. I didn't realize that we could have that kind of poll of people.
And he said, anyway, I hope you at least trust Russell Wilson, you know, another guy with two first names.
Yeah, I don't know that Wilson's a first
name.
That's
a borderline. Wilson's a borderline first name for you?
It's not borderline. I think it's more of a last name.
But there's dudes with the name Wilson for their first name.
A few. Like who? Like what? Like, give me one.
Well, there's Wilson Phillips from, you know, the singer.
That's the only one that I could think of. And is that a dude or a chick?
Fair.
Okay. Just saying. Yeah, how many other Wilsons you got?
There's the Wilson from Home Improvement.
No, it's Mr. Wilson.
Oh, it probably is Mr. Wilson.
Yeah. Wilson the volleyball?
That's a thing and not a name.
No, from Castaway.
Oh,
he was a person. He was a character.
Well,
How dare you? It was an emotional moment.
But he got his name because that's the name of the company.
It's not a first name. That's my point.
There's got to be some famous Wilsons out there.
No. I don't think there does. Are you Googling Wilson first name right now?
No, is that what you're doing? I'm moving on.
Okay. I'm gonna take that as a win.
we'll come back to that.
All right.
Welcome to the flock too. Chris in Vancouver in at $5 says, hey guys, sorry it took so long for me to finally quit being a dirty, dirty freeloader. Mama taught me better than that. What mama also taught me though is
catfish
the Rams. Go Hawks.
Hey man, his priorities are all in the correct spots. Like I love it. But which Vancouver, though? See, you can't just say Vancouver. You know how long it took me to figure out that those were two different places?
There's two Vancouvers?
Yeah. I'd be embarrassed to tell you the age that it finally dawned on me. Like, I honestly, for the longest time, thought that, like, Vancouver, Washington was just on the, you know, American side of the border.
Yeah.
And, like, basically was the same town as Vancouver, Canada. And like they just, you know, it was basically one deal just separated by the border. I thought that for a really long time.
Yeah, it was what, like a month ago when you're driving to Portland and you're like, Vancouver, Washington.
No, it was more like 2 years ago, but it wasn't that long ago.
You were driving to Portland, though, I guarantee it. And you're like, wait a second.
I don't want to talk about it. And you might be right.
I know I'm right because I felt the same way when I found out.
Yeah, that was pretty dumb.
All right. Well, Chris's mom sounds cool.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan Nissen, in at $5 a month. Welcome to the flock. Jordan says, Adam and Brandon, I appreciate the pod as it was either my first or second pod and easily the longest lasting one. If you read this on air this week, it will find my wife and I on our travel from North Dakota to Seattle so that I can replace a well-loved Earl Thomas jersey prior to the Saints game. I will rep the 12s with something more modern to sit in our season tickets for the very first time. I'm so excited to scream and yell with the 12s from Jordan.
Hey, man, that's amazing. Well, as you're driving across, Montana and all that and Idaho and everything, if you see somebody in a boxy white Jeep with Montana plates, most likely would be me. Stay high. Wave. And then I hope to see you at the game, man.
You're the only guy with a boxy white Jeep in Montana.
I'm correct. I'm collecting all the boxy white Jeeps in Montana, I decided.
It does have a Seahawkers podcast sticker on the back, though, if I remember right.
Well, the Cherokee does. The Patriot doesn't yet.
Oh, okay.
I should probably do that.
You should do that.
I've been meaning to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you want to get in the flock, you can go to getintheflock.com. And, you know, if you find value in this show like Jordan did, it may take you a little while to realize what kind of value it does bring to you. But that's a way to go and help show your support and say, hey, you know what? I like this.
And by the way, it usually takes people more than half a show to realize that this is something valuable to
but,
them.
You know, maybe not 7 years like it did with Jordan.
Well, I mean,
somewhere
I wasn't going to call him out.
It's somewhere in between, usually.
Yeah, I think we've found the line. It's 2 years, right?
It is two. It's the average line.
Right. I mean, that's the maximum time that you can go as a freeloader.
Yeah, the grace period.
Yeah. And then you should feel guilty and lose sleep over it. So.
Right. Congratulations to Gary, one of our members of the flock, the Pick'em winner this week with 13 points, and he gets the tiebreaker, picking both the Sunday night game and the Monday night game correctly.
Very well done by Gary. I did not have a great week two. I had a really good week one, but kind of a piss poor week two. But now my question here, Brandon, is with the most points and least points scored when they ask you that question.
Yeah.
Do you just go with the Dolphins every time for the least amount of points scored?
And then Patriots
and then
for the most.
Whatever team is playing the Dolphins has the most amount of points scored. Because that's what I do now.
That seems like the strategy. And I think now maybe you're at a disadvantage because now everybody knows that.
I'm pretty sure I wasn't the first genius to figure that one out.
It kind of feels like the way to go about it, though, now, doesn't it?
Sure does. Yeah. 102 to 10. Is that what they've been outscored? Something along those lines?
Yeah. Yeah, I did see a post somewhere that the XFL was looking at welcoming in the Dolphins into their league coming up here soon.
Dude, I just wanted to take a few minutes to make fun of the Dolphins in the main show because I'm going to do it like relentlessly in the pick show.
There you go.
Like, because I hate the Dolphins so much. They're one of my most loathed teams in the NFL. And to watch them just be completely god awful, like maybe one of the worst teams that ever suited up in the NFL, like, oh my god, it is so joyful to watch. I love it.
I did check in with our friend Sam Marcoux of the Perfect Bill.
I was about to
podcast.
Do that actually this week. Yeah.
And he just said that he's looking forward to drafting Alabama in the 2020 draft.
They'll have enough picks.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, if you want to tune in to catch the pick show, make sure you are either a member of the flock. You'll get the show that way, or you can get it through our Seahawkers podcast app through either the Google Play Store or the iOS store. Are there any other ways? Those are the main ways.
Those are the main ways. Yeah. The pick shows are fun.
They are. Yeah.
Yeah. They're even looser than this show.
Yeah. Way looser. All right. Moving on, someone else meeting up with us, including because Jordan mentioned he was coming to the game. Lisa Wilson coming to the game. The other Lisa in Seattle.
Yeah.
Remember,
hey, her last name's Wilson?
Her last name is actually Wilson.
Oh, but not her first name.
No.
Okay. I'll just check in.
She says, thanks for the welcome and for the shout out on the show. I didn't intend to set up my profile with only my first name visible, and I'm not surprised to hear that there's another Lisa in Seattle in the flock. It is an awesome, though popular name. I'm sure the other Lisa in Seattle is a great person. After all, she is a Hawks fan. That being the case, I'm not so sure about Adam's idea of meeting up before the Saints game for a Lisa Joust to the Death tournament. I could never raise my joust against another Lisa Seahawks fan. So, to avoid the confusion, I've updated my profile to reflect my last name, and yes, it's my real last name, Wilson, related only by a love for the Seahawks, but no blood relation to our venerable quarterback, Russell.
She needs to learn how to lie better.
Right?
Yeah. He's like my 14th cousin on my, you know, grandmother's side.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, something like that.
You think Russell's only had two wives, but, you know, really he's had three. I just decided to keep the name.
Politicians make up where, you know, their bloodlines. Why not us, too? Yeah. Like, we'll just do that. Yeah.
I hope that you do go on to collect every Lisa in Seattle into the flock. And while I've never met one myself, but I've been told that there are other Lisa Wilsons in Seattle. So when the purported individuals with the same name do join the flock, I'd like to go down in the books as Lisa Wilson, first of her name, OG Flocker, and 12 for Lifer, or LWFONOGF12FL for short. That should keep us all straight. Until the next Lisa in Seattle joins, go Hawks.
I'm going to learn how to say that as a word. Because I think she earned it with that end of that email. That was amazing. And Lisa Wilson, you are fantastic. I don't know that all Lisas are awesome, though. Like, my sister Lisa, while cool for the most part, married a Steelers fan.
Ew.
So, yeah, exactly. Ew. That's in my family now. And so, yeah, I mean, you don't all bat 1,000, you Lisas.
I don't know if your sister even a Seahawks fan, though.
No, that's what's wrong with her. Well, there's all sorts of things wrong with her.
Why are you even bringing your sister into this conversation?
Because she's a Lisa.
But she's not a Seahawks fan, Lisa.
Well, I mean, she might have sort of been until she married that dirty Steelers.
Not all Lisas are Seahawks fans.
Okay.
But all Seahawks fans named Lisa are awesome.
Okay, there we go. All right, fair enough.
Right?
That feels like an ACT question or something, like in the English. Okay.
Want to call out a quick review from the Apple Podcast Store. Says, I picture Brandon. Oh, it says, it's titled The Odd Couple. Mm. And it says, I picture Brandon, Felix, in a very neatly organized podcast studio, talking points neatly typed and organized with color-coded tabs, sitting at his desk in his pressed short-sleeve button-down shirt, number 2 pencil, and yellow highlighter at the ready. Adam, Oscar, on the other hand, I picture him wiping grease off his hands as he just finished working on his Jeep, cracking a beer as he plops down into a well-worn, overstuffed chair 2 minutes before the podcast begins. This probably isn't completely correct, but in any case, they consistently put on a good show. A must-hear if you're a Hawks fan. Thanks, guys, for making my commutes enjoyable and making me a better little flocker.
That's freaking hilarious because it is not far off.
My podcast studio is a little messy, though.
Well, yeah, and usually mine was actually, you know, up until these last few months, mine had generally been the cleaner of the two podcast studios.
It's true.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, at this point, if you were to get a live look in right now, you'd be pretty close, only I'm drinking iced tea instead of beer just because it's midday and I got to pick up my daughter in about 15 minutes from school. Right. And apparently, if you do that while holding a beer, it's frowned upon.
It's frowned upon, even in Montana.
Yeah.
Well, Adam, what things are we frowning on this week as we get into our do betters?
My do better this week is for a man from Canada,
mm-hmm.
Who is 35 years old, which should already mean that you should know better being 35 years old. But a man named Devin, Mitsuing, that's his last name, Mitsuing, was fined $4,000
for not saying thank you after ordering his burger from A&W.
Very close. Very close.
Use your manners. Do better.
But back in 2015, Devin got a little liquored up and drove into Banff National Park and stumbled upon a grizzly bear out in one of the fields. You know what Devin did? He hopped out of the freaking car, pulls off his shirt, and tries to challenge the bear to a fight. Runs out there. He's got his dukes up. And like a local photographer happened to be there, took pictures of him kind of like putting on this whole show while one of his buddies like is watching and laughing. Fortunately for his dumbass, the grizzly bear decided to run away.
Yeah.
But now I'm sure that bear's not putting up with any more catfish from anybody now. And so to Devin, who decided to go shirtless at the age of 35 and fight a full-grown goddamn grizzly bear, that is really stupid. And do better.
I know as Montanans, we joke about punching grizzly bears in the face. It's just a joke, though. That's you don't mess around.
Right. And apparently he's had some other problems getting liquored up and driving around in his past. But I don't understand that one for the life of me. That just makes no sense.
I don't understand any of people standing around wild animals that are, you know, even half the size of humans.
Yeah.
Let alone way bigger and tougher.
Yeah. Like, you, I mean, I got bluff charged by a marmot once, like up in Glacier Park.
Yeah.
And like, there was a minute there where I was like, oh, I don't want this going down. Like, this could get kind of mean. Right. Like, I want no part of that. And truth be told, it was like in this little mini pass.
Yeah.
That we were walking. We ended up walking around because I didn't want to tangle with a marmot.
No.
And yeah. He's like a, you know, 1/100th of a size of a grizzly bear.
Yeah. Yeah, people know snakes are no good, right? I feel like everybody knows snakes just because they seem kind of scary. They don't have legs.
They don't seem scary. They are scary. They are the devil, and they're plotting to kill you at all times in your sleep. I promise you. All the snakes should be wiped out forever.
But how come you hear people with stories about messing with bears and moose and other things, but never hear stories about people wanting to dance with a snake?
Yeah, nobody wants to dance with a snake. That's a bad idea.
That's what I mean. But everybody knows that.
But somebody wants to tangle with a moose? Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's probably because they're not scaly and they don't move unnaturally.
That could be.
Yeah, and smell with their tongue. See, there's just everything's wrong about snakes. Everything.
It makes a difference.
It does. But yeah, just point of fact, bears can be mean. Moose can be even meaner, just so you know.
I would not mess with a moose. I've probably told this story on the podcast before, but people in Coeur d'Alene, we were down at the park downtown. There was a moose loose in the city park.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, hey, look, a moose.
What was this? Northern Exposure?
Yeah.
Like what was the show?
And I'm like getting my kids like behind a fenced area just so, you know, we have some protection from the moose. And people are, oh, they're out taking pictures. Look at the moose. It's like, no, people get away.
Yeah, my most feared animals in order in the Montana woods go like this: mountain lions, moose, and then bears. And bears are like a distant third because usually bears are cool. But
well, usually bears hear you come and then they run away.
Yeah, they don't want they generally don't want to like mix it up.
Yeah,
they don't. Yeah, whereas a moose, you can just catch them on a bad day. Like, you know, their little calf could be being a dick all day, and they're just in a bad mood, and they'll tear your ass up. They will.
My do better this week is for the Seahawks Pro Shop, Adam.
Oh, okay.
I was on Twitter on Tuesday and saw that one of my favorite all-time Seahawks running backs growing up, Chris Warren, was experiencing a problem that frustrated me as a fan. Because in the Seahawks Pro Shop, you can go online, you can click, you know, they have little buttons where you can click on if you want retired players' jerseys. And it's a lot of the ones that you'd expect. There's Steve Largent, Kenny Easley, Cortez Kennedy, Walter Jones, all the Hall of Famers represented. But then you get into a few others, and, you know, it makes sense. Jim Zorn, you know, clearly a Seahawks legend in the Seahawks Ring of Honor. You got Sean Alexander, which, you know, I love that it's the old school jersey rather than the one he spent most of his career wearing.
Oh,
and
really?
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Okay.
And I like that because he's the only Seahawks player who earned MVP honors as a member of the Seahawks. So I like that that's in there. You got Warren Moon, which, okay, a Hall of Famer, played with the Seahawks, called games for the Seahawks for a long time.
He has Washington ties. University of Washington.
Played for the Huskies. Yeah. I get that one. But then you get down to the last two. Brian Bosworth, which I'm okay with because I wouldn't mind owning a Brian Bosworth throwback. It just seems cool.
He's famous.
Yeah. I mean, not famous for what he did for the Seahawks on the field necessarily, but just famous for his persona.
Yeah.
And we talked about him on our top 15 former Seahawks that every Seahawks fan should know.
Right.
So it makes that one kind of makes sense.
It does make sense. Yeah.
But then you have Ricky Waters. Now, no disrespect to Ricky Waters, but I bet I can name at least 10 players who I'd rather have a Seahawks throwback in the Seahawks Pro Shop.
Well, yeah, not because of the quality of player that Ricky Waters was, because he's actually really damn good.
Yeah, it's just that he's a 49er.
I think of him more as a Niner and an Eagle than I do a Seahawk. Yeah.
It's like Jerry Rice throwbacks being available in the Seahawks Pro Shop.
Yeah, right.
It feels like that to me.
Yeah.
Number one on that list for me of Seahawks throwbacks that I would want, just as, you know, the era that I grew up in, It would be a Chris Warren throwback jersey. The Seahawks' second leading rusher, only behind Sean Alexander. And the fact that Chris isn't able to go online and find a Seahawks throwback with the number 42, Seahawks Pro Shop. Do better.
Yeah, I think you need to bump Ricky Waters on that one. I mean, it's not like they have a finite amount of space to offer throwback jerseys, right? Like, you can put up as many links as you'd like on the internet, correct?
Yeah, add Kurt Warner, John L. Williams, Dave Craig, Dave Brown, Jacob Green, Brian Blades, Matt Hasselbeck, Joe Nash, and maybe the greatest football name of all time, Rufus Porter.
Oh, man. Yeah. None of those available?
No.
Wow. See, I'd kind of like a Joe Nash, I think.
That would be, the longest tenured Seahawks player of all time.
Yeah. Yeah. And unstoppable in Super Tecmo Bowl when you used him as a nose tackle and you did the dive around the center to just, tackle the quarterback.
Joe Nash and Chris Warren are two of the greatest Super Tecmo Bowl players of all time.
Oh, Chris Warren's not great in Tecmo Bowl.
Super Tecmo Bowl.
Well, even Super Tecmo Bowl. Like, that's what I'm saying. Oh, that when I say Tecmo Bowl, everybody thinks of Super Tecmo Bowl. They don't think of the original one.
Okay.
Like, well, Super Tecmo Bowl was the Tecmo Bowl.
I think I'm thinking of Super Tecmo Bowl 3 was my go-to one.
Oh, okay. Was that on Super Nintendo?
Yeah.
Oh, see, I never played that one.
Okay. Yeah. The Super Tecmo Bowl on Super Tecmo Bowl 3 on Super Nintendo with Chris Warren. You had Rick Meyer as your quarterback, who you could sub him out for Stan Gelbaugh. It didn't really matter.
No, it didn't.
And you just hand the ball off. It was almost as good as Bo Jackson, but not quite as the level of domination by a running back in Super Tecmo Bowl 3.
I did not know that. Yeah. That's good to know. Yeah.
All right. On to Better at Life.
All right, man. My Better at Life than Skip Bayless this week is space related, believe it or not.
Hey.
And I mean, some of the listeners have caught on to the idea that I enjoy this stuff. So shout out to Troy for emailing an article earlier in the week about scientists finding a planet that is very similar to Earth in the habitable zone of its star. But this is not for that. Title of this article is "A Lunar Space Elevator is Actually Feasible and Inexpensive," scientists find.
Ooh, space elevators.
Yeah. So Columbia astronomy students, Zephyr Penori. See, that's what got me screwed up. I was already trying to say Zephyr.
If his first name was Wilson, you would have nailed it.
Yeah, but it's not. It's Zephyr Penori and Emily Sanford. And shout out to Emily for making the second half of this a little easier with her name. But they actually came up with the idea of, well, they didn't come up with the idea of a space elevator to the moon. That's something that's been bandied about for a while. But they came up with a simpler solution that I can't believe nobody had thought of before, let alone myself. Like, freaking duh. They were like, hey, why does the space elevator have to go all the way from the ground of Earth all the way to the moon? Why don't we just make a space elevator that goes from the moon down to geostationary orbit, where all of the rockets and everything that we have now actually go to relatively easily and safely, and you don't have to worry about a giant cord in the sky being tethered to the Earth that if it snapped would like take out half a continent, right? You don't have to worry about that anymore because it's up in space. You don't have any wind, you don't have any weather, you don't have any of that crap,
yeah,
you know, that would affect it. And the really cool part is, after they did the math on the whole thing, if they were to make a cable that went from geostationary orbit all the way and anchored it to the moon, they could make it the size of a pencil in diameter, and then also it'd weigh about 88,000 pounds. Guess what that means? That means we could actually put it in the largest rockets that we have now, like the Falcon Heavy from SpaceX.
Mm.
So this is actually feasible, and their cost analysis is they could do the whole thing for just a couple billion dollars.
Wow.
And the quote in the article is something that goes like this. That is, quote, within the whim of one particularly motivated billionaire, which is
a
true fact.
I wonder who that might be that they're talking
about. Well, it's one or two, right? Yeah, it's Elon or Bezos, right? Like, it's one or two. And so anyways, this would be very cool. So basically, you could have cheap flights up to geostationary orbit. You'd hop on your little moon train, ride it all the way up to the moon. Start mining up there, start settling the place, all that. So to Zephyr Penore, and I'm sorry if I screwed up your name, Emily Sanford, thanks for, again, helping me out. Better at life than Skip Bayless.
It always was problematic to me, wondering how we were going to you know, tether the Earth and the Moon together when both move. But this seems like a solution.
This is going to help with that.
Yeah.
I just think it would be cool.
It would be. Another guy who did something pretty cool is Carson King, who is my better at life than Skip Bayless this week. And it started off being kind of a dumb thing, but it turned into a really cool thing. He was on College Game Day, and you know how the people get behind the TV commentators, hold up the signs, saying random things. Mm-hmm. This one said, Busch Light Supply needs replenished, and he put his Venmo username up on a sign. Well, enough people.
All right, the only thing I'm going to knock him on so here so far is you got to go with the Busch Heavies.
Right.
Don't be going Busch Light.
Well, he goes with the Busch Light, and it was kind of funny when money started to come in. Like, oh, hey, this is cool. I'll be able to get a case of Busch Light.
Yeah.
Well, after about 30 minutes of holding the sign, he had more than $400 in Venmo donations. Carson is now up to $39,000 in donations. And a big part of that is because once the money was getting up there, I think it was right around 600 where he thought, you know what, there's better things I can do with this money. And he decided that he's going to give everything above and beyond that one case of Busch Light to the University of Iowa Family Children's Hospital.
That's awesome, man.
So now he's up to $39,000. Venmo said that they are going to match all the donations. Busch said they're going to match all the donations.
Holy smokes.
So you're up to over $100,000 now for pulling off the stunt on College Game Day for the Iowa Children's Hospital.
That's amazing. Just by being thirsty.
Just by being thirsty and poor. And so for turning a desire for crappy beer into a positive, Carson King, better at life than Skip Bayless.
That's awesome, man. It'd be very easy to just pocket that money and nobody could say anything otherwise.
Nobody would know.
Nobody would know. And instead doing a really cool thing and that's what's really neat about the idea of doing the right thing. A lot of times, a lot of other people will kind of join up and help propel that forward. And obviously that's what Busch has done and
Venmo
has done. And that's really cool. So yeah, good on him.
Well, and you know, who knows, maybe it would have stopped at, you know, like $1,000 or something. And you know, he would have had a nice supply of beer money for his entire college time there.
There you go.
But he chooses.
You think you can go your whole college career only drinking $1,000 worth of beer?
Well, he's 24, so I'm guessing he's either maybe toward the end of grad school. Oh, no, he said he attended Iowa State, so he's out of college now.
Okay.
I mean, that's a year.
3 months.
I'm thinking if you go Busch Light, it's probably a year.
I think I'd go through a bit more beer than that is all I'm getting at.
And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.